when we start talking about superheroes specifically, the one that I wish my kids had a frame of reference on was Hong Kong Phooey.
I was going to say Hong Kong Phooey.
Number one super guy.
That was pretty good.
That
right
was
there.
Pretty good. Yeah. That was almost a Ryan and Shane moment there.
It was. Yep. Now, I hope you don't start singing together.
Ryan's much better at both impressions and singing. Well, we can sing together.
Is he better, though? Is it?
No, in my mind he is. In my heart he is. I know it. It's much more entertaining for me to watch or to listen to Ryan do an impression of something than it is to watch like somebody like with a dead-on impression on SNL.
Oh, no, that's true. He gets by entirely on style points.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, circling back briefly to what I was talking about. Yes. So I really wish my kids knew about Hong Kong Phooey, because if you think about it, like every time that he would fight crime, he would bounce into a dumpster and then come out of the dumpster and then go solve whatever the thing was.
That's right.
It's like if you think about it, like every single time there was a crime, he would start at the bottom, like literally in the trash, and then fight crime.
That's great.
Yeah. So it's really kind of an American story when you think about it.
It kind of is.
It's the American dream right there. Like end up in some trash and then, finally pull yourself. What I was going to say, actually, this is Canadian. What was that Drake song? Like started at the bottom. Now we're here. Like that's purely Canadian. So I'm getting a blank look from Mark.
Well,
it was a big hit.
Because my mind first went to the Jeffersons and then it went to Sparkling Water.
Like sparkling water.
Sure.
Clearly Canadian.
Oh. Okay. Now we're all confused. All
right. Let's do this thing. I'm Shane.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Mark.
Somebody likes it. I'm still doing that Peter Dork.
All right,
joke,
Peter
though.
Dork. That's fine.
It is the. I'm looking for a new metaphor for, for passing on. Like, it's the end of that.
Kick the bucket.
The end of that.
Exited
paragraph.
This mortal coil.
No, returning all those their, we know all those.
Returning their seat back tray to the upright position.
See, that could work.
Yeah.
Although, what was it? Somebody was saying.
I think you'd be in the upright position and lower it. To the downright position.
Either way, you don't want to be on that flight.
No.
Although Billy Eichner tweeted a couple of weeks ago that the favorite time, if you're a stewardess or an airline attendant or whatever the appropriate
stewardess.
Yeah.
Is the PC?
If you're welcome to the 1960s. Anyway, if you're an airline attendant, that he was like that their favorite time is when they like have to walk down the aisle near the end of the flight with a plastic bag and just look at everybody and go, trash.
I saw that. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, I may have told that story before, but it's still great.
No, I mean, you may have. Not
super relevant.
2 hours.
So, yeah, so Peter Tork of the Monkees.
Bass player from the Monkees. Let me tell you this about Peter Tork and his late in life gracefulness. I watched not too long ago, and I may have mentioned it on the show, like within the last year, a documentary about the Wrecking Crew, which is this legendary cabal.
I have the book.
Yes, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Of LA legendary Los Angeles session musicians. And I mean, they were on everything. They played all the instruments on the Monkees stuff. They played all the instruments on the fucking Beach Boys albums. All of them. Like, all the instruments on the Beach Boys albums.
Yeah, those guys were the backing band for, like, all of the, like, a litany of hits.
Right. I don't know if you guys ever saw, like, Standing in the Shadows of Motown, which was a similar sort of story. The Jackson 5, like, all of those amazing Motown songs that we all know. This is like that, except on steroids a little bit, because it's more stuff, like all the Mamas and the Papas, like everybody. And one of the my favorite anecdotes in that movie, they interview Mickey Dolenz, who was the drummer in the Monkees and probably their main singer, and Peter Tork, who is like the tall, gangly bass player guy. And so he like shows up very young. I mean, they got like all of those guys except who was the English guy? I can't. Davey. Like the dreamy Davey, he had a background in musical theater, but the rest of those guys were actors that somewhat played music.
Michael Nesmith's mom invented
Whiteout. I knew that. Yes. and so they, that's the fourth one of that little gang. But Peter Tork showed up at this session where they're going to be doing a session, their first sessions for the Monkees music, showed up with his guitar and his bass. And got pissed off about it because these amazing people were playing it. And then years later, he's like, oh, yeah, no, I was so wrong. I was not right about, like, you know, getting, like, snotty about that stuff. So, you know, God bless him.
Perspective.
I was a big fan of the TV show.
I love the TV show. It was really funny. Do you remember, like, in the late 80s where they had the... they were playing like Monkees reruns on MTV.
Yeah. They also did a tour not long after that. Oh, like a reunion type. I saw them at Astroworld.
You saw the Monkees live?
I did. I saw the Monkees live.
I just remember the one where Jan had a broken nose.
Oh, yeah.
Who?
Marsha.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
But that's not the only death we've had this week.
No, yeah. There'll be considerable less talk going on.
Yes.
Well, talk, that was the, like, bum-up, bum-bum, bum-up, right? Wasn't that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was like, one of them.
All you do is talk.
What you gonna do when you get out of jail? That wasn't...
No, that was Blondie.
No, Ghostbusters.
Who you gonna call?
That's what I'm saying. That was not Blondie. It was a couple of people. It was a spinoff. From Talking Heads.
Fab Five Fetty.
You know what?
Oh, that's right. It was. It was the bass player from Talking Heads.
Yes, and that's why I'm thinking that, because it's talk. But yes. Talk. Was that in my life? Oh, I can't remember. There's some 80s.
Mark Hollis from Talk.
Obviously made a huge impression on me. I mean...
Well, he's made a huge impression on a lot of musicians. Was it It's
My Life? Was that one that he did? Talk.
It might have been.
Can you guys just name a fucking Talk song?
Talk.
Yeah, Mark's right, actually.
Oh, okay. I don't know that I'm familiar with that song.
So anyway, like all of the major music outlets, Pitchfork, what is this?
Yeah. Life is what you make it.
Spin.
Life is what you... You
I gotta
totally,
hear it.
You should hear anyway. It will play it for you, and you'll absolutely know what it is.
The guy was quite revered by the music community.
He did do It's My Life.
It was It's My Life? I was right about that?
You were absolutely right.
Okay, I'm going to do a tiny mic drop.
Okay, there you go.
All right.
And quite frankly, I think Talk would be a great subject for us to cover.
We totally should.
I'm all about it one of these days, seeing as how literally it's the conceit of the show. Like, somebody likes it. Obviously, it's not me because I know It's My Life.
Yeah.
And that was like living on a wing and a prayer right there. Stanley Donen died this week, who was the director of Singing in the Rain, which I randomly watched two times over the last month. I'm much more a musical fan of than anyone else in the room, and rest in peace.
That is arguably Allison's favorite film. And
it's the best musical ever made.
Oh sure, yeah, totally. And even like objectively, like
yes, you know, yes, it is.
It's super well executed.
We can talk musicals all night long with me. I can't. But as far as songs, there's songs that you know, like the Great American Songbook was built on, you know, like songs like these are a few of my favorite, you know, Rodgers and Hart and then the Gershwins and stuff like that. And the guys that wrote Singing in the Rain like weren't that well known of songwriters. But anyway.
I was quite fond of the Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Where they did the
musical. Well, that was just one episode, though, right?
Yeah, but it's a great musical.
Sure. Yeah, I'm talking about
Can we
stuff.
Please get on with the show? The
Let's get on with the show. Yeah. This is it.
So it is an abrupt departure. And so I think before we get into what we're going to get into, We should let the audience.
I like the way
know.
That you put that. You kind of sound like Donald Rumsfeld for a second. We can't know, you know. Okay.
Yes, yes, clearly.
Let's get into what we're going to get into.
And it's the same level of importance. So anyway, now before we dive into the show, one of the things that Mark floated around when he suggested the act that we're going to cover today was it's technically not a full record. And so there's a little bit of back and forth about whether we should just burn the show to the ground. Just kidding. We'll do that through our dialogue. Well, but well, the
I think
but
we've
anyway,
done that already.
Yes, but anyway,
first,
but the point being
first 11
that,
minutes
that,
of the show
that that this is a, it, this is a, had you not chosen it, it's one that I would have I was planning on choosing. So I think it's apt, and the story's I think pretty interesting. And so you should say who it is.
Who is it?
He said who it is.
Oh, he said who it is.
Yeah, he flipped the script.
So we are listening this week to the EP debut release of Boy Genius. It's called Boy Genius.
All capital letters, no space. Are all lowercase letters.
It's actually
letters. All lowercase letters.
Like,
but it
oh,
wouldn't
shit,
be great
Shane
if
listened
like,
to the wrong Boy Genius.
I just like yeah, there are some other Boy Geniuses.
Yeah, there were.
Yeah.
But so this is Phoebe Ridgers.
Lucy Dacus.
And Julian Baker,
yes. And Lucy Dacus I'm not familiar with, but definitely familiar with Phoebe Ridgers.
Tell
and
your story,
Julian
Shane.
Baker. Go ahead.
What story?
About how Lucy texted you? Yeah.
Okay, well, I have a little bit more than that to say about this.
We'll settle in.
No, we'll talk about the record, but just in the outset here. I have a dirty little secret to tell, and that is I had listened to this record before, but I didn't love it, and it kind of was just in the background while I was driving. And the reason why I was listening to it is because on this show, Kevin brought in Julian Baker record a couple years
Her
ago,
first
which
one.
We all loved.
Yeah.
I brought in Phoebe Bridgers' song for A Current Affair, and my actual favorite of the three of them and their solo work is Lucy Dacus, and I like was driving home one night and like had gotten turned on this record, and I was texting Kevin like, while I was driving like putting the, you know, like with that thing when you're like a little bit drunk and you're like, I just need them to know right now, and you're like, oh, there's traffic.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, traffic's going. And A-N-D, you know.
No, it's just like a long string of autocorrects.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but you did, but you to your credit, you did mention Lucy Dacus. And I like Mark, know her work the third best, I guess, out of anybody on this record. But
it's so good.
Yeah, like, no, I want to dig into it.
There's no, KUTX has been playing two singles by this band. And in my, and again, I love every artist on this, and I love they've made something completely different than what they do solo. But there's no, it's not an accident that the two singles they're playing are both Lucy Dacus songs in my mind. Like, she's got that not pop sensibility, but like
she's
hooks.
More,
she's a
more
hooker. She's more of a like hooks.
You can make the argument that she's more
well, so
direct.
Is Phoebe, no. So is Phoebe Bridgers, but too. But
I mean. It's interesting that you say that this is a did you use the word departure? I don't remember, but it's just.
I don't think it's a departure. No, I think it's interesting. It's a departure when you have the three people, even though they're writing the songs, what they're doing is different with the harmonies.
It's different
and
with the harmonies and everything, but I feel like there's at least one song on this EP that each one of them truly shines through, and you're yep. like, oh my god, that's
that one, and yeah. it's by design. Like, they're yeah. the six song EP, three of the songs.
That's the other thing; it's only six songs.
I know. Well, and that's usually so. I will say, like, and I don't think we're like giving away the ending of the story here, but it's like one of the chief complaint in every review that I read of this EP, and there were a few, was it's just too short. Like, where's more? Like, so like that, you know, it's as complaints go, that's the one that you want.
Well, like, okay, like, that's kind of what I was gonna exactly what I was gonna allude to. So Dirty Little Secret, I didn't love it as much as I wanted to when I was listening to it, like right around, you know, the turn of the year, right around New Year's, and I liked it, and then I guess I just got distracted at other stuff. You know, I was like driving around and stuff like that. And then, and these are three women I consider to be remarkable. It's no secret to anyone that listens to the show, I'm a fan of women musicians, and I love all three of these musicians. And so then when I finally went back and like put on the headphones and I was listening to the record, I was working, had to stop. I've listened to this record approximately 20 times.
That seems like a lot.
It's 21 minutes long.
Yeah,
I listen to it constantly.
Yeah.
Put it on in my car, put it on while I'm working at home. Like, it's fucking good, man. It's so good. And then, and here's the last thing, is that then I start reading about it, and I realized that I had somehow skipped the sixth song on it. I'd only gotten
it's like a little present.
Yeah, it's like one of the best songs I've heard in as long as I can remember. Ketchum, Idaho, like, it's ridiculously good. It's so good that I was like, I'm sitting by myself, like, crying. Not really, but kind of. And it's brilliant. And they do this thing in that song, that Ketchum, Idaho, so I was going to talk about later, but now that I'm thinking about it, their harmonies are so... I was reading about it, and... You know, Phoebe Bridgers shows up, you know, she's like, well, I mean, there's no way we're going to do this. And then they like write the song, write the harmonies with some of the best harmonies I've ever heard. And then each one of them sings a verse on it. I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm. It's really, did you watch the Tiny Desk concert that they did?
No.
It's really apparent when they're just literally singing in front of that desk, the like the way that they've divided that particular song that you're talking about in particular.
Is
like,
that on that Tiny Desk?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to,
it's
to
cool.
watch that. There's one of the coolest things about that, and I just want to say this because the first few times I listened to it, it was like, oh, it's over, let's listen to it again. Oh, it's over, let's listen to it again, you know, like. And
Shane's making the look like it was on a cassette tape, like, movement with his hand.
He's rewinding it with a pencil.
Exactly.
And so one of the coolest things that they do, I've never heard anybody do before, the way that they do those harmonies, whoever's the middle harmony, I think it's probably Julian Baker, does a slide in to the other. It sounds like she's playing pedal steel. Did you notice that? It sounds like somebody's playing pedal steel.
There is a pedal steel player, and I don't know that it's any one of those three, but in the live stuff that I've seen, there was somebody that was actually on what appeared to be pedal steel.
If there,
maybe it was Lloyd Maines.
We'll see, but I'd love to hear. Either it's mixed incredibly well because I spent so long, but you can also hear that in the harmonies, the way they slide in and stuff like that. And I was like, it sounds like they're playing a fucking pedal steel.
Well, and I will tell you too, the other thing that I remember from that watching that Tiny Desk bit was that the way that they were situated, left to right, like from the audience's perspective, was it was Lucy, Julian, Phoebe. So I would bet when you're talking about who slides into those vocals in the middle, that is, it's probably Julian Baker.
Well, she's got, like, as far as from what I could tell, I mean, like, you definitely know that Lucy Dick is an alto. She's the lower singer. And then I think that Julian Baker and Phoebe Bridgers have a similar range, but they kept talking about how she can hit the real high notes. So I was thinking, well, she's probably the one that hits, like, the real high notes, and then there's like that middle harmony. I don't know.
Well, why don't we check that song out?
Yeah, I'd love to.
I agree, that's one of the best ones on here. So this is Ketchum, Idaho.
Play it.
Back in the States now, in a college town, I would walk around, but it's really coming down, mesmerized by double lines. Till you tight ropes, I'm making good time. I am never anywhere, anywhere.
One of the things I think that is really illustrated by that song is how much space they leave each other. Like, the construction of that song, like, this, one of the things I've spent a lot of time thinking about, and whatever. We were going to record this show last week, and Shane was under the weather, so I've had more time to stew in it than I typically would. But I think I spent a lot of time thinking about whatever, air quote, supergroup is. And typically, it's a bunch of preening rock stars who step all over each other, and this is definitely not that.
So definitely, I thought that not.
This song really illustrated well
the how fact much they complement each other.
Like, well, and that they're just like very, they're giving of, like, they know each other's work well enough that
they're three young women, yeah, like, exactly not preening and stepping over each other.
Right.
You know, like, it's not, it doesn't seem like there was a lot of ego in that room.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's a lot like Damn Yankees, but still.
You know what? That's exactly, I think, I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure I wrote down Damn Yankees with a question mark.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Or what were other the only supergroups I can think of are like indie rock supergroups, yeah, like New Pornographers, but they're, other than Damn Yankees, can we even, I mean, are they in any way, or were they in any way ever relevant?
Yeah. No, I mean, other than groups, like just groups that ended up becoming,
like Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, so, yeah,
technically super, they kind of were.
Right. I mean, you could really, like, if you really like sat down and hammered through it, like, you could probably figure a few out. But, and it's a term that kind of gets thrown around, I think, a little bit too often, with very little consequence. But in this case, like, I think these are three musicians who are, and they're kind of doing it in the opposite order, right? So it's not like they were a group and they split off and did their own thing. They each had their own identities, and it just so happened that they toured together a lot, and they liked each other.
Yeah, they're young and they're female, and they got thrown together in different situations, and, you know, they have some, I mean, Lucy Dacus is a little bit of the outlier with her music, but you can definitely hear, how part of the puzzle pieces she fit in, you know, right away.
And there is a little bit of the, like, so the name of the act is a little bit of an ode to the idea. Well, like, so Lucy Dacus in one of the interviews said something along the lines of, like, I'm totally paraphrasing here, but it was like something along the lines of, like, the fact that we're all female is, like, really kind of the most boring thing. Like, it's like,
totally agree with that assessment.
Yeah.
Like, why would interviewers even be asked? Excuse me.
Right.
Asking them that.
Yeah. So I think, you know, basically, Boy Genius is an ode to the idea that, like, that a singular male can be, you know, if you read between the lines here, like, it's that a single male can be a genius, but that women sometimes get lumped as sort of all the same, and this is clearly a nuanced work.
Well, and I'm guilty of, like, some of those thoughts as I first started listening to this, you know. And
sure,
I was thinking of other, like, all female groups with great harmonies,
right,
you know, and thinking, like, how do I fit them into that genre of
what
music? They just don't. I mean,
it's totally. It's one of those things where, like, you can definitely tell, like, the edges are sanded off by the other two performers.
Sure.
So where, like, it's almost indistinguishable, like, from the other songs. I mean, it takes you a minute or a couple of lessons if you know all three of their material, and you're like, oh yeah, that's definitely a Julian Baker song.
Well, there's also, like, that whole, like, they're thematically, there's a lot of overlap
thematically. That's the thing I was, like, going to say about the Lucy Dacus stuff, even though, like, her stuff is a little more, well, whatever. It's not that far off from, it's a real close circle, you know, in a lot of ways. It's really, none of it's really that far off, but, like, thematically, for sure, lyrically, there's a lot of overlap in a great way. I fucking love this album, man. I can't believe it took me to the second lesson, like, or lesson, listen. Took me to
both.
A second lesson.
Yeah.
You done learned.
I done learned my second lesson. You want to listen to another one?
Yeah, I would love to, because, I mean, this probably is a close second for me as my favorite. It's clearly a Julian Baker song, as far as I'm concerned. Me and My Dog.
It's actually not.
No, it's Phoebe Bridgers.
But again, like there's definitely a part of that song that is where
all those the whole things are like sanded by the rest of them by the other two like to make it sound like.
Well, I love that song too. I was hoping that was gonna be the song.
I love the story that is woven in here. So why don't we listen to that?
Consequence of Sound had a really great take on this record. Their verdict, I thought, felt pretty analogous to the way that I'd netted out on this album. They said, within a short span of time, Boy Genius manages to cover universal experiences of insecurity and perpetual, sometimes funny sadness, along with more individual situations like the instability of touring, all with the same specificity, cleverness, and dreamlike melodies that could not have come from anywhere else. Basically, what they said is like they all bring themselves, the kind of the net of this review is like they all bring themselves into the equation, but together it doesn't sound like any of them individually, and it couldn't have come from anybody else. And I think that's prime compliment.
Really true.
Anyway, I really like that song a lot.
Every song on this record is good, man. Like, I mean, good, like really good. And that's the thing, like, about what you were just reading. You know, like, that song is great, but better than I think a lot of the stuff on her solo record, which was great. There's just a lot of interesting.
Who's solo?
Phoebe Bridgers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Which is a fantastic record. And the same can be said for, you know, all three of them. It's just good stuff, man.
Yeah. No, I think, anyway, you know, not to sort of beat the same drum here, but I think that, well, and I do think it is kind of interesting that it's like there's this, that sort of, that insecurity thread, they really spend a lot of time there. And I think that is, you know, the comment was made in one of these reviews that listening to, like, Julian Baker's solo material, which we've covered on the show before, you know, sometimes feels like it's like being in a room by yourself. Like, it is kind of the epitome of loneliness, whereas Phoebe Bridgers' stuff usually is like, it's like there's this sort of longing and forlorn and like disappointment.
But it's more like wide open.
It is more wide open.
But yeah. There's a lot of similar, like, sad longing. There's a lot to be said about, you know, people that have the same sort of, you know, pedal to the metal for whatever, you know, emotions that they want to add.
It's that whole web of being on the road and sort of all the things that are unique to being probably, in this case, like,
right, when
young,
somebody else
musicians.
Would not understand it. Somebody else would not understand, number one, you have a certain tenor to your lyrical content, and you have a certain lifestyle that's just, especially being a female under the age of 25, like touring a bunch.
Right.
You know, there's something, it was either you or your brother said when we covered Julian Baker that you kind of want to just like put her in a blanket. Shane said that.
Yeah,
like, you want to just put her in a blanket.
He kept calling her a little bird.
Yeah, and protect her like a little nest.
I also keep calling her a female. I don't know why I keep saying.
But I don't feel that as much with this. I feel like I can relate to it more. Like, I feel like there's more kind of it touches on emotions that a lot of us have. You know?
But there's strength in numbers also.
That's true too.
You know, like there's just genuine strength. Like, we're, you know, not just strength in songwriting, strength in humanity.
Well, they really lean into the harmonies, which I think is...
their harmonies, like, are fucking incredible.
Yeah. No, it's really terrific. And lots more to talk about on this record, but time flies.
Yeah, should we do a few minutes here?
An intermission.
Yeah.
Intermission music.
I wanted to play a song that was somewhat similar to what we're listening to tonight, but I kind of just lost that somewhere along the way, and it's been a minute since I've played a little glam metal from the mid '80s. And
has it really been that long?
It has been
a while. It feels like just yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
But it's been longer than you think. It's been a couple years, at least a year.
Long enough to grow your hair out.
Oh.
With some crimp?
Yes.
Oh, dude, crimp. we were yep. watching my...
the best part of that, by the way, for the listener, was Shane was doing this thing with his hand, like he had a crimper.
Like I had a crimping iron. Yeah.
Yeah. Or just,
yeah, you
or
know,
a cramp.
Like Whitney Houston on, you know, I Want to Dance with Somebody or whatever.
Non-committal covered yeah. I Want to Dance with Somebody.
I'm pretty sure it's I Want to Dance with Somebody, but, I'm not entirely, I want to dance with somebody, but you
or
know,
whatever,
fuck
yeah,
it.
Yeah, sure.
I might like a milkshake instead.
Right.
So this song that I wanted to play, it is similar in sentiment in a lot of ways to Kiss's incredible nugget of, No.
Oh,
no,
Heaven's
no.
on Fire?
I Want to Rock and Roll All Night.
Oh, yes.
And so I before we talk about the song that I'm playing, which is like the film, if you listen to the lyrics or bring up the lyrics, it's sort of like the film noir version of I Want to Rock and Roll All Night and Party Every Day. But I was thinking about when we used to be on oneofus.net. And when I was talking to podcast overlord Chris for a while, like trying to like figure out an idea for some kind of thing to do for him before I, you know, came up with Somebody Likes It. And one of the things back in those days, he was still talking about doing maybe some print media. And that went, by the way, real quick. But one of the ideas I came up with was... And the reason it went away is because I asked him if he had any money to put into this, and he said absolutely not. And that was, I wanted to pay somebody for 1 week to rock and roll all night and party every day for 7 days straight. And so nobody but me thought that was a workable idea. So I was willing to put my body on the line for it. But
you know, not a lot of people know this, but there's actually a third... There's a third section to that, which is like, I want to rock and roll all night and party every day. And then the rest of the time, just rest. And so, like...
But after you rock and roll all night and party every day.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. But it's like the rest part is just
because
quiet.
That's... I mean, I get that idea, but that's after X amount of days. Because let's face it.
Yeah.
If you rock and roll all night... and party every day,
right.
Doesn't leave a lot of time for rest.
Well, there's some twilight hours in there, you know, prime time.
Maybe
TV.
Like maybe the, maybe if it's like rock and roll all night and party several days.
Yeah. I mean, okay,
many,
see, we are
many
so
days.
Far like
an,
beyond
like an old Jewish mother now. Like and several, Kevin. Anyway, so
Tuesdays
something.
Party on Tuesdays.
All right, so the song that I wanted to play was by the band Slaughter.
Oh, they're cute.
Which, contrary to what you might be thinking, isn't about like cutting people up and slaughtering them. It's just a nice Jewish boy's last name, Slaughter. And the name of this song is Up All Night. It is. It's
so confused.
Up All Night. So we're going to listen to Up All Night by Slaughter.
Yeah.
Them boys need a haircut.
I think that's why, like, at the end of the video, out of nowhere, there's just a children's chorus singing My Country Tis of Thee. And I think probably what that was a bunch of guys coming in from, Durham, Alabama in their trucks to... They're with their pitchforks, to come and cut their hair off, but we didn't get to see that because the video ended.
That's right.
Did it, though? I just figure that somewhere perpetually, forever, like a mirror backed up against another mirror, there's just another edit happening right now.
Yeah. More edits.
A lot of edits.
There's lots of edits. Yeah, and it's, that's like the Paul Greengrass or the Tony Gilroy of fucking videos from 1988. I mean, like, was going on there?
There was rain, although the drummer was not in the rain.
No.
There was some sideways water, which we don't always see.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there were fire hydrant issue.
Bustiers. There were a couple of Rottweilers that one woman was walking.
Lots of and shadows.
Lots of shadows, but they established the dog subplot early in the video and then later brought it back out of nowhere where this guy was walking up behind the woman. She was walking to like Rottweilers and then she never even turned around and said anything to him. And he kicked the old school, like kick a rock with your sideways.
Well, shucks.
Shucks. Like it, not a lot making sense in that video.
You had a little bit of the prospector dance going on there.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I'll
demonstrate the full thing for you later.
Good.
Please do. One has to appreciate the commitment to nonsense that video did offer us. Like, what?
And it was I'll tell you what it was like. It was like, so there's a movie that came out. This part's not important.
Ace Ventura?
But there was a movie that came out within the last year. One of the many, many things that came out on Netflix.
Black
somebody,
Panther.
The movie itself isn't important.
Netflix.
I can tell you what it is, but it doesn't really matter. There was a there was a review of this particular film that said it looked like it'd been put together with artificial intelligence, just like a bunch of shit like slapped together with no rhyme or reason. That's what this video felt like to me. It was if you just dumped the 80s hair scene into a computer. And they're like, just put it together and, cut it.
Or it's like
whatever shots
like one of those one of those things that they pull behind trucks and then put limbs into, and it just spits shit out the other side.
A wood chipper?
You go up to it and just throw a bunch of Betamax in there, and
this video
comes out the other side a truck.
It could be. Very well could be.
So, yeah, this was also one of those weird periods of time where you had nice, young Jewish boys naming their glam metal bands after their names. Mark Slaughter was one of them. Kip Winger was another one. Like there was this little mini thing, right? And by the way, Kip Winger, we watched him. Yeah. He has one of the most amazing lines in rock and roll ever, which is, "She's only 17. Daddy says she's too young, but she's old enough for me."
Yeah. I don't know.
That's pretty good stuff.
I don't know about any of all of that.
One last thing I wanted to when I was reading about Slaughter is that the two principals in the band, which by the way,
Mr. Belding and then the other guy, the
Mark's principal
Slaughter. Yeah,
And Mr. Belding, that would have made a great band. Is that the bass player and the guitar player, singer / they were like the dudes. They were like, thick as thieves and high fives. And they were in this guy, Vinny Vincent's, which, by the way, another good one. And so they got signed with him, with the Vinny Vincent Experience or Vinny Vincent Band or whatever it was, for, X of millions of dollars. And he was eventually, before his record came out, he was fired because he ran up too much credit on his against credit from let's say the label was
like
Capital,
the advance.
But on their credit cards, not his own credit cards, their credit cards. So they fired him and hired Slaughter.
And they apparently were just up all night, but like
they did at least have the common
decency to sleep.
Yeah,
all
see,
day.
Mark, I like that the fact that you presented that because they're okay. So remember, I said it was the film noir of the short-lived genre of metal bands singing songs about partying all night.
Yes, you did say
It was the film noir about that. But Mark had a good point, is that they were just fucking wimps. I mean, they had to sleep during the day, whereas Kiss. And Kiss didn't
They chose to use that time to party.
Right. But they didn't. But Kiss didn't drink or do drugs. Well, at least half of Kiss did not. So anyway, okay. So there's Slaughter up all night. You guys are welcome.
And, boy, are we.
And we'll go back to talk about some very similar music.
So, favorite Phoebe Bridgers solo, one of my favorite Phoebe Bridgers solo tracks, which we have covered. I think that's the one that you actually brought to the middle of the show before.
Motion Sickness?
Yeah. Talks about some stuff that, in this case, came to light this like past couple of weeks, and that is namely that apparently sounds like the dude that she sings about in that song is Ryan Adams, who is quote not making friends these days.
I think that you could apply that quote to much of the last 25 years of his life.
No, I think that's generally speaking kind of his reputation.
Great songwriter.
Great, yeah, exactly.
Not a nice guy. Yeah, there is a, I can't remember the name of it. This is how wonderful of a human being he is. And before we even get into all of the other female, it's so weird. Unpack all of his sexual abuse stuff. But a couple of years ago, there was a book that came out, and it basically delineated. It's like a oral history timeline of like the early 2000s to like, you know, the time when the Strokes and the Walkman, the resurgence of rock and roll in New York. It's a fucking fascinating read. It's a great book. And one of the things it talks about, or Julian Casablancas definitely blamed Albert Hammond's subsequent heroin addiction on Ryan Adams. Who also used to apparently go, they were all friends, and he lived close by apparently, and he would show up with like coke and like throw down a big bag and stuff like that. And so, you know, it was just all happening. And then pretty much everybody went away from it, and Albert Hammond Jr., one of the guitar players from the Strokes, you know, got into it. Now he's clean. And when that book came out, Ryan Adams took to Twitter, and I guess Julian Casablancas put on a couple of pounds, and he was saying shit like, oh, so it was me that got, you know, Albert Hammond Jr., you know, hooked on heroin, like, who got you hooked on Big Macs? And like, and he's just an incredibly pleasant dude. Well, it comes out like that he like had like, he was sexting with a 17-year-old girl. He was being, you know, emotionally and verbally abusive, never physically abusive, but did put his hands through walls, apparently, like with his ex-wife Mandy Moore, late of the fuck is that fucking show where you're supposed to cry when you watch it? This Is Us.
Oh yeah,
she's on that.
I don't watch it. I just cry on my own.
Yeah, I just cry.
Yeah,
just sit in my closet by myself. Sure. And cry.
Yeah, you and like 25 cats.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm down to
playing
down
Ryan.
I'm down to four music. Now.
Okay, yeah. Or four. Whichever.
Yeah. So, and there was like, I was at the grocery store yesterday, and there was one of those, you know, pick your poison, you know, People or Us Weekly or, you know, all the other ones. And one of them was like, Mandy, you know, all the abuse I went through and her ex-husband and what he did. And it's, it, you know, it's just this horrible, horrible dude. Who also is now being possibly federally prosecuted for sending all these text messages to the 17-year-old girl or underage girl for sure. Maybe she was 15 at the time, I think. Anyway, young and inappropriate in every way.
Is it weird though that like the thing that I keep going back to is the line in that Phoebe Bridgers song? That where she talks about asking, like, why is it that you sing in an English accent? And now I want to go back and listen to, like, Ryan Adams' song.
Is that song about him?
I don't know if it is. But I think clearly she found him to be an asshole. So,
right. Like, so there was a lot of stuff on there about like he would, and this wasn't just for her. It was Mandy Moore. Like he told Mandy Moore, like, you're not a real artist because you don't play an instrument.
Right.
Like, fuck you, dude. And just fuck you in every way. But, you know, he's telling, you know, young female artists like Phoebe Bridgers, like, you know, I'll produce you and get you discovered and go on a tour with me. And then, like, when she, I guess they had a romantic relationship, and when she called it off, like, he just one by one would take all that stuff back. Like,
well, and I did think it was really interesting that on a little bit on social media that those two exes, Phoebe Bridgers and Mandy Moore, were like kind of high-fiving each other on Twitter. They were like on that same subject, and I was like, I don't know if, and maybe this is just short-sighted on my part, probably, but I was like, I don't know if two dudes would do that. Like, they're like, but they were clearly simpatico. They were like, yeah, that guy's an ass. Bottom line, Ryan Adams, dick nose, as they used
super,
to say.
Super pleasant human being.
Yeah, no. He's,
you know, I feel like it's
curmudgeonly.
Sort of
he's young to be curmudgeonly.
Yeah, well, he's been curmudgeonly since he was younger.
Yeah.
Just a douche. But it's also, you know, I wish I had the details a little bit better. But, I mean, these are people's personal lives. Like, talking about them, fuck him. Anyway,
it seems like, you know, even if some of those experiences are fodder that goes into to this particular recording, we're talking about the Boy Genius EP. You know, by the way, we've kind of danced around this, but we haven't talked about it specifically. This record was recorded in 4 days. So, Mark, you mentioned earlier at some point, I don't know whether it was during a break or whether it was when we were recording, you said something about that you can tell that these are one takes, that they're
not... they're kind of live cuts.
Yeah.
Well, the last one is definitely live cut. You can tell the difference in sound. And apparently from what I remember, like, the three of them are singing harmonies around, like, one mic or...
But it sounds like they've kept a lot of the scratch tracks on this.
Like, yeah. So if they never record...
It's pretty good sounding, though.
If they never record anything else, does this mean that we'll just get, like, we have these six songs and then it'll be, like, an outtakes of the Boy Genius EP, just, like, small, tinier and tinier output? Yeah. It's kind of like Conan O'Brien's late night career, just like gets smaller, but I actually mean that in a positive way, like smaller and smaller, but more special and specific. So anyway.
Concentrated and refined.
Yes, that too.
Well, that's a pretty goddamn good record. Do you want to listen to one more of these before we?
I do want to listen to one more of these, and
not just right now. I mean,
there's six songs on here. We've listened to two of them. The other four are equally as good. I do really like Stay Down, and this one.
That's a
Julian
Baker
song.
Yeah.
So why don't we listen to that one?
Okay. Little blurb from the Pitchfork take on this record. They said, it's exciting to imagine the possibilities of the Boy Genius EP as a full-length album, and Boy Genius is more than just a side project, but there's a sly message that comes baked into the short EP, a message that is better communicated briefly and then evaporated, and maybe only to those who are really listening. Dacus, Bridges, and Bakers are individual artists with individual styles. Individual tastes and individual styles, quote, women in indie rock, end quote, isn't a genre. For anyone still struggling to tell any woman with a guitar apart, the deaf collaboration and complex collective songwriting on the Boy Genius EP is a great place to learn. All that's totally true. Still, as collaborative songs go, that really sounds like a Julian Baker
song.
It
does, yeah. Heavily led.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think definitely heard. She has two back-to-back, I'm pretty sure, right? There's one and there's like...
It may be true. I think so.
Those are the two that are sound more like hers, but they do. It's just... Bottom line is a good fucking record.
Yeah. Solid.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
Also started that. At the bottom now or here or whatever I was saying earlier, Drake.
We're moving on up.
To the... East side, technically, I am moving up to the east side
to the
tonight.
When big apartment.
I mean, I'm not moving there.
Oh, you're not?
The big apartment in the sky. Is that an allusion to, like, heaven?
No, I think that was pretty literal, wasn't it?
Oh, I think it was, yeah.
Are we talking about the Jeffersons?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I can get on it, dude.
I don't know.
All right. Well, that was a fantastic record. And
I'm glad we did an EP.
I listened to it so many times.
Technically, it was only a minute shorter than Dolly, so.
And that was a full record.
Yeah.
I was wondering, I kept meaning to bring that up, like if anyone had done the math there. All right, Kevin, what do you have this week?
All right, so tonight's few minutes with, we're going to,
Current Affair,
end of the show track. We're going to listen to a Kiwi band, not the fruit.
Like the little bird?
From
like the flightless bird,
New Zealand, called The Best, with a song called "Future Me Hates Me."
Okay.
John Oliver show that he mentioned, I guess, last week, the week before last, where apparently New Zealand keeps getting left off of maps, like, entirely.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah. And so I feel like maybe when that happens, like, you just develop something really awesome on your own. I'm long been out of the proverbial, I'm wide open about my adoration of music from that country. And The Best are from New Zealand, and I just really dug that song. Like, I connected with it right away. Not shocked at all that, Shane, you also know this track a little bit.
Perfect record. Yeah, that song is a 10 out of 10 for me, man.
Yeah, like, no, it hits me where I live.
The lyrics are amazing on all those songs. That song, like, she's got that great, great hook. But the lyrics, like, really are what take it over the top. You're like, that's really... The whole time, the first time I heard that record... every couple of lines I'd be like, God, that's so fucking clever. Like,
it's clever, but it's not
clever like punny clever. I don't know, it's hard to explain. It's just really smart and funny, but also not like one of those like ween kind of jokes where it's a joke. It's just clever. It's just
It's just smart and well constructed, and not
that whole song. Okay, so that whole song is talking about how her future her is going to look back on her right now and say, like, oh my God, you fucked up so many times. You kept, you know, future heartbreaks, future mistakes. Like, I won't say clever again, but it's a fun idea for a song. You know, Future Me Hates Me.
Well, is it possible that New Zealand's getting left off of maps because it's the New Zealand, like, they're doing it on purpose? Like, Peter Jackson is
they don't want people to go there.
They brought too many Americans there.
Maybe.
They're leaving their Coke cans.
And now that we've ruined Cuba, with it, like,
So New Zealand's like, screw it. Let's just wipe ourselves off the map.
No, I don't know. I mean, I think that's possible. Not necessarily literally possible, but at the very least, like, they're kind of this, you know, hiccup, like, compared to the massive size of Australia, and they just keep getting left off. Where this acted, I was thinking, when I was racking my brain, like, I just, Courtney Barnett was not top of mind, but speaking of which, it's like, that type of clever is not, this is something different.
Yeah,
but
this is more pop music, but it's hard.
It's intricate without being jokey.
It's like, smart, but not like the Courtney Barnett stuff is very smart, but more like in a Bob Dylan way. This is a little more wordplay.
Sure.
A little bit. And all the songs on this record are like that, but they back them up with the melodies that I don't personally think Courtney Barnett displays.
Well, it's just their styles are different. Like,
totally
different. And so to some extent, it's an apples and oranges thing, but it's like we typically talk about Courtney Barnett on this show. It's like usually about like how funny she is and how some lyrically, you know, with regard to your Dylan comment, like she takes some chances that feel similar in that way. This is not that, but it really, I found myself, like, the lyrics stuck with me, too, on this track in particular. And anyway, no, I dig the shit out of the Beth, so I thought this was great.
Yeah, and what is it about Australia and New Zealand that over the last, I would say, 18 months, that they do 90s American music better than anybody in the world? There's so many records I've been listening to, or artists I've just been, you know, that have been popping up, and I'm like, this is such a great 90s song. Of course you're going to be from Australia. And then it's like, that's, you know, Hatchie from, you know, Perth, or, you know, and the list goes on.
Which I found out is the San Diego of Australia. Perth. It's a beach town. It's a, yeah. Anyway.
A lot of music comes out of there. I think she's from Perth. Hatchie? I think she is. But
maybe.
I don't know. Who knows?
Anyway, yeah. So that's the best. Everybody go out, buy the single.
I bought many of Kasingles back in my day.
Yeah, there was.
Do they still do those in New Zealand, you think?
Maybe. Yeah maybe.
Take little paper sleeve.
Lot of tape to stretch from there to here. So anyway, yeah. Thanks, Mark, for picking the track the album that you did.
Yeah.
Shane, thanks for the hairband.
Kevin, thanks for this.
Sure. So next week, and we have one thing we haven't talked about, and I suppose next week we'll touch on it a little bit more, is South by Southwest is getting ready to start here. Oh, for anybody who is listening to this show, presuming we get it out before March 8th, if you're in town and going, if you're in Austin and going to South by Southwest, come see the 20x2 show at the North Door on Friday, March 8th. Anyway, that said, this past week, we hit the 20th anniversary of the Roots record, Things Fall Apart, which is really sort of the record where that band made their bones. And I don't know it, really. So that's the one that's what we're going to do next time.
Amazing.
I think that's great. It's been a little while since we've had a little hip hop on the show.
Yeah. It's time. We're going to bling it up.
All right.
All right. Well, till then, I'm Kevin.
I'm Mark.
I'm Shane.
This is Somebody Likes It.